The semi-annual warehouse clearance event is on at Sleep Outfitters. Save up to $1,000 store-wide with our lifetime price guarantee and 100% comfort guarantee. Why shop anywhere else? Limited time clearance savings only at Sleep Outfitters. Visit sleepoutfitters.com.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal. Listening Colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today here on Jazz Shapers is Alex Bomberg, founder of International Intelligence Limited, the security and intelligence company. With his parents fostering many children, Alex grew up in a busy house full of changing faces. Following in his elder brother Tim's footsteps, Alex joined the British Army in 1991 as a private soldier in the Gloucestershire Regiment and was deployed 3 years later to Bosnia as part of the UN's Protection Force. After becoming an aide to members of the British royal family at Kensington Palace, then rejoining his regiment in Kuwait and the Falkland Islands, Alex left the army in 1997 and began working in the security industry. He founded International Intelligence Limited in 2002, specializing in counter-espionage, royalty protection, and the psychology of security and protection, and later split the expanding company into a group structure under Intelligent UK Holdings Limited. What a catchy name. Great to have you here. Espionage, counterterrorism, James Bond, all these things. Is it you? Are you James Bond? Is your life really like that?
Most definitely not. No. And actually, you know, nobody wants to talk about espionage. Nobody wants to talk about security. Not really. It's a bit of a dirty word in the business world. We all talk about risk now and resilience. Mm. That's the buzzwords, really.
Euphemisms.
Certainly that. Yeah.
When you were a kid, did you want to be in the army? Was that a thing?
Yeah, I wanted to ski. That was my first real passion. You know, as a young man, my brother skied. He was in the British team for cross country in biathlon. I was a downhill skier. As a young person, I worked at Gloucester Ski Centre.
I remember Martin Bell.
Yeah, he was around in the 80s, yeah.
That's right.
In the early 90s,
which would have been as you were growing up.
And his brother Graham.
Graham, that's right. Famous British skiers that were not really world class.
They were pretty good. You can't really knock Great Britain for producing skiers at that level.
I was going to say, without the facilities, it's kind of difficult, isn't it? It's a very different thing.
Yeah.
So when you were younger, though, was the skiing about activity? Was the skiing about getting out and about? Were you a very physical person?
No. Actually, the skiing was because I was expelled from school at 15. So they had to get me to do something. So they put me for work experience at Gloucester Ski Centre, and that taught me... Yeah, it taught me a set of values that you'd never ever learn at school, really. I think teamwork and that actually business and being in a business environment, even a ski centre, something like a leisure centre, it's not the same as being at school. And there is a certain set of behaviours and a certain thing, you know, that's expected of you that, you know, as a young person, you just don't learn in a school environment. And education is not for everybody. It's only in the last 10 years that I've come back to education, you know, and started actually really wanting to learn. So, you know, it's not school's not for everybody. Luckily, there are paths for young people that just don't do education very well.
When you were younger, and you obviously, everyone's probably thinking, well, why did you get expelled, Alex? Was it anything to do with home life?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was quite a, I wouldn't say a traumatic. My parents fostered, you know, for 30-odd years. So it was not a normal environment to grow up in.
And how many kids at any one time would they have?
Normally around about 3. However, you know, social services could turn up on a Friday night and plonk kids on my mother's doorstep, and we would take them. Yeah, my mum and dad would take those kids. They were award-winning foster parents, and my mother was on the National Board of Fostering as an advisor for quite a few years and did lots of training. Yeah, and they eventually, you know, gave up and retired. But I think that had a lot to do with who I am today, I think, really. And the fact that certainly on the, forgetting the espionage side of my work, but on the protection side of work, you know, being a protector, wanting to save people and look after people, I think a lot comes from that.
How many kids roughly were fostered by your mum and dad?
I think well over 100 over the 30 years. Some were there for a couple of days, some one night, but some long term.
So from what age, Alex, were they fostering all your life?
All my life, yeah, absolutely. I was brought up into it. You know, they started fostering in the early 70s. Before that, they met actually near Brighton at a place called Bolney, the school that Daley Thompson went to.
Okay.
And they moved from there to Gloucestershire and were fostering almost straight away, yeah.
And then connecting that with you being expelled, what was going on for you at that time? And I said, was it related to the movement, not chaos, but the kind of in and outs all the time and kids that needed looking after, protecting, to use your word? What precipitated you behaving badly at school?
I think I just didn't feel like I belonged. And I think I needed something like a work environment to be in. Something with a different style of discipline. You know, when you're young as well, you want to play up to other kids around you, you know, your peer group. And it's, you know, that sort of behaviour, same with the army. You know, immaturity is not accepted. So you learn in a different way, you know. And it's good because I say not everyone's geared up for education, you know. I never really started, but I actually started reading properly when I was in the Falkland Islands on a 4-month tour down there in the army, and I was picking up books on all sorts of things. I even remember reading a book on nuclear fusion. I mean, that's not a kid that's been expelled from school at the age of 15. You know, I started becoming an avid reader at that point. But really in my later life, I've really got into learning more about academic theories of
and you lecture on psychology, don't you?
The psychology of
security and things like that. But the move into the army, you followed your brother, and a lot of people do kind of look up to their older sibling. Obviously, again, the relationship between the army and then what you've gone to do is pretty easy to see. What did the army teach you?
Firstly, discipline, which was, you know, it's lacking in a lot of people's lives, even today. Being a soldier, one of the first things you learn, doesn't matter what regiment you're in, you know, one of the first things you learn is turning up on time. You're always there 5 minutes before, 10 minutes before. That's on time. That's not early. Mm. If you're 30 minutes before, that's early. But it's okay to do that. And I think, you know, that and learning how to dress yourself properly and what is and what isn't acceptable, you know, different environments with the military. But you can become, I think within the military, if you spend too long there, again, you can become very insular because it's a very different environment, again, than a work environment.
But you saw things, right? I mean, people would die around you. I mean, I'm not saying literally in front of you, but I imagine there's been a lot of stuff that happened that's also affected you.
I didn't really see any action per se. My only proper service really was in Bosnia. And that was very frustrating, really, for my regiment. We lost a few guys in Bosnia through road accidents, and how that was dealt with politically and by the military was quite upsetting. So I've never really, you know, I've never seen any action. I've got lots of friends who served in Iraq and Afghanistan after I left who, you know, they saw real action. And, you know, for me, my military service, I wasn't a very good soldier per se. It wasn't really for me.
In what sense wasn't it for you?
I was a bit disillusioned early. So when I joined the army, I loved training. I really loved being in training. But when I joined my battalion, we were doing a role called spearhead. So you're on 24 hours notice to move. You had to be packed with your equipment ready and things like that. But that really wasn't, you know, it was a lot of waiting around. And that's what frustrated me with the army. There's a lot of waiting around, which wasn't necessarily filled with good stuff. It was, you know, you'd be sat on your bed for hours on end, not doing weapons training and not doing any physical exercise. And that I really, you know, that wasn't for me. I needed to be kept busy. So, I mean, I ended up in roles like I worked in the officer's mess. I worked as a CO's driver, worked in
the CO, you know, commanding officer?
The commanding officer, was commanding officer's driver. You know, different roles. And that's how I ended up working at Kensington Palace. You know, there's lots of different roles in an infantry battalion that's not necessarily frontline, but, you know, certainly you get deployed frontline anyway. But, you know, there's lots of different roles other than being an infantryman, which I actually quite enjoyed.
Do you think, though, just and I want to talk, obviously, after we've heard from the Michigan Academy digital session, I want to talk about how you got into the world of business and how that segued and what happened when you left the army. But do you think that sense of importance of service and importance of protection, even if the experience itself wasn't what you wanted it to be, and it was, the, as you said, there were lots of downtime, was that why you went in there? Was that what it was beyond following your brother?
Yeah. In my family, I was brought up in a very sort of conservative environment politically, but also there was lots of honor. You know, I look at the army and I look at the forces. You're serving your country, and I have got a big thing about the royal family and the country. Great Britain's, you know, it's such a wonderful place in respect of our traditions and the tradition of service and putting yourself last, really, the country first. Mm. That's important, and I think that that's something that I always wanted as a child when I looked at soldiers and looked at what my brother was doing and his friends.
And what your parents were doing with the fostering as well, of course, putting themselves behind the kids that they were bringing into care. Much more is going to come up from my guest, Alex Bomberg, in a couple of minutes. Right now, as I promised, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Academy digital sessions, which can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Michigan Dere's Joe Hancock, head of the cyber team, and Katie Ling talk about current trends in cyber fraud and what individuals and companies need to do to protect themselves.
The Michigan Academy digital sessions. Conversations on the legal topics affecting businesses and individuals today.
I think that the main thing is to be proactive and not reactive. We've seen a lot of people will respond once they've been hit by a cyber attack, but in many ways, you've lost your data or you've lost a lot of money by doing that. Whereas if you have these systems in place beforehand, then that's going to be much better practice.
So, as you said there, Katie, being proactive, not reactive, preparing and doing these things first. What can you do to prevent this stuff? Is there anything that can technology help us here? You know, is it worth kind of building the walls around our organisations higher? Any particular tools or techniques you'd recommend for people?
Yep, definitely. And I think that this comes back to the basics. You know, I've urged so many people I know to just not use the same password everywhere and on every online service. Use a secure password. And it sounds simple, but just so many people don't do it, because if one password is breached, then a criminal has access to anywhere that you've been online. But I think that also introducing two-factor authentication is really important. And just these general security checkups that people sort of normally ignore, they can be really helpful in protecting yourself.
The Michigan Academy Digital Sessions. To access advice for businesses that is regularly updated, please visit michigan.com. Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers. I think there's over 500 of them now on the Jazz Shapers podcast. And you can hear this very program again if you pop the words Jazz Shapers into your favorite podcast platform. My guest today is Alex Bomberg, founder of International Intelligence Limited, the security and intelligence company. And as with anything, the person behind it is often connected inextricably to the very thing that they're trying to do, which is to protect and to serve. And it is true in your case as well. When anyone leaves the army, people always say it's like, you know, it's like leaving politics. Like, it's a big deal. It's a major movement, a shift in your life. I understand that there was, after a few years, you discovered you call him an MI6 officer. You call him Jeremy. Who knows if Jeremy's his real name? And there's a little wry smile from Alex. We don't know, but it doesn't matter. Have you had support at these critical moments? Who has been there? What have they given you, Alex, that's enabled you to then become the man and the leader that you are?
I've been lucky because I think being in an age pre-internet, I was around at times where it was easy to learn the trade. I was lucky that I was given opportunities and being around the right people really helped. You know, my brother left the army and he ended up working in this world. And I was, you know, given opportunities that I might not have been given had it not been for him. So that was quite lucky for me.
But emotionally, what were they? What did a Jeremy, we will call him, give you, do you think, at that time? You said quite insightfully you needed the structure of something, whether it was the ski school, whether it was the army. There's kind of a bit of discipline that Alex needs around him to be the best version of himself. What happens when you're in the big wide world? Is that what that anchor does, that Jeremy type person does for you?
Yeah, I mean, that you really look at these individuals as a young person, a 20, you know, an early 20-something, mid-20-something. You look at these people who have been in the intelligence service or the special forces. And, you know, I wasn't cut out for that. However, you know, wow, you know, what a world that these people have seen. Mm. The things that they, you know, the things that they've done, they can't really talk about. People have, as you know, people who have been in that role really don't talk about it very often. And being able to learn some of the tradecraft, you know, surveillance, going through bins, learning how to do a pattern of life study on a target. And
what's a pattern of life study in a few words?
So a pattern of life study is looking at an individual, looking at their real life. So they might be in a mid-level accountancy position. Mm. However, they might be driving around in a very expensive Porsche.
So something doesn't stack.
Exactly that, yeah.
I've got some people. We could discuss this afterwards. We could do some pattern of life analysis. That doesn't quite work. But you know what? It's funny, isn't it? The human condition, we know when there's something called dissonance. We know when there's something not quite right. We don't always know what it is, but that's obvious. I mean, if you're driving around in a Porsche or, you know, you're doing something that's totally not connected to your salary, that's an easy one. But there must be more subtle ones as well. The movement into setting up your own thing. Many people leave the army and they go and work as a civvy and they do what they do. You didn't. Where was that from? Where did that desire to actually be your own boss, as it were?
I think from the moment I left the army, I always wanted to work for myself. I wanted to own a restaurant and work in catering, hotel and catering. I actually did try that for a short period of time, but was very disillusioned with it and wanted something more exciting. And again, you know, being from a military background, same with people that leave the police, security is something that you can just fall into quite easily. There's lots of transferable skills there.
But interesting, your own thing versus the structures that you'd sought, that's slightly contradictory.
Yeah, I think I'm unemployable, I think they call it.
Is that
it.
What it was?
I think so, yeah.
But to actually set that business up back in 2002, just over 23 years ago or so, must have been scary. Or did it just feel like that was your only option?
Sometimes you've got to take a leap. And I think it was a little bit about that, taking a leap. I'm a risk taker in my life. I'm a risk taker. And I think you've got to be. If you want to be successful, you look at all the successful business people out there. It measured risk, of course, which I've become more accustomed to learning about and practicing. But you've got to take risks to run a business. You can't run a business and just take the easy path all the time.
These last 20 years, massive variety, different situations geographically, different situations from a pressure point of view, new stuff happening, cultural stuff that you have to adapt to, technology, huge amounts of change. How have you navigated all these different things?
One of my strongest points is that I always look to the future. I always look at the horizon, look what's coming, look what the next trend is, what the next threat is, and look globally as well. A lot of people only look as far as their front door or their county or their area of the UK or their geographical area. I look beyond that, and horizon scanning is the biggest thing. I mean, the next biggest threat coming is AI. And if you run a business and you're not in tune with it, or it's not on your radar, that's going to be a big problem. I was lecturing in Dublin a few months ago, and I was asked what is the next big, huge security concern? And I think it's social engineering mixed with artificial intelligence.
And what's social engineering?
So social engineering is using psychology, using human psychology to get information out of people, or get people to do what you want them to do. And when you combine that with artificial intelligence, you can commit a lot of fraud and very easily. And it's already happening now. There's already been a huge fraud in Asia where somebody was pretending to be, they got an AI system to work with them, and they committed a huge, huge fraud on a company.
So how do you, you're not a technologist, but obviously technology is a big part. How do you ensure that you and your business is not only able to keep up, but also able to kind of move as things move in new directions? Because that's tricky while there's the stuff of serving clients. There's the stuff in front of you. There's the things to do.
Yeah, so I have got two roles, really. So my main role is obviously run my companies, but also advise clients and work with clients. So, you know, every client we work with is different. They've got different cultures that they're working in. They might be in Asia, they might be in the Middle East. So with what I do, my role, I've got to combine, you know, running a company with, you know, and doing all the PR and everything else, but with, you know, finding out what is the next thing. But luckily, you know, connected into institutes that I'm a member of or fellow of, I learn all the time.
I was going to say, that's bringing full circle back to the learning point, which is obviously, as you said, something as an adult which you love to do, which is lucky, because if you weren't doing that, you wouldn't be keeping on top of things. Stay with me for my final chat with my guest there. It's Alex Bomberg. We've also got some music from Marcus Miller. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
Alex Bomberg's my business shaper, just for a few more minutes. We've talked about all the areas that you've learnt about, all the areas that you're really deeply interested in. We've talked about the meta theme of artificial intelligence briefly. There's obviously, at the moment in the world, a lot of insecurity. There's huge capability to commit fraud, as you said, through technology and through artificial intelligence. There's a lot of geopolitical unrest. You must be a busy person. All the experience you've had, Alex, how does it prepare you for the next generation of problem? How does it prepare you for the new form of espionage? Because there's one thing seeing it coming, and there's another thing actually being able to help your clients.
Yeah, so you've got to remember with everything, it all boils down to people. Security is all about people, places, and technology. But people are the weakest link in all of that. So even with artificial intelligence, things have got to be done by people. And that's where you start. We go into organizations and we try and help them build their security culture. And as I said at the start of this, people don't want to talk about security. They certainly don't want to talk about espionage. No one's got a problem until they've got one. So to actually go in and work with a company and look at the culture of how you can actually add value with security, I'm a great believer that security should be part of everybody's job. It shouldn't be an add-on. It should be part of what they already do as their everyday process. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very difficult to look ahead and think, can you completely take people out of it? And you can't. Mm-hmm. We're not going to all of a sudden in 20 years, everyone's not going to be retired. People are still going to need to be part of the process.
And there's a very practical part of it as well, which, of course, when you're providing bodyguards, that's human beings standing next to other human beings. I imagine that's still a big part of your business.
It's a huge part of our business. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be right. When you're picking a bodyguard to work with somebody, it's got to be the right person. It's got to be the right fit. So that's a very, very personal service. And that's all about people.
Do you teach people about the ability to be culturally sensitive? Because again, the different countries you've lived and worked in, the different things that you see, you will naturally pick up how to handle situations and to diffuse and to manage appropriately. You know, have you managed to convey that? Is that a big part of what you do? Is it important?
It is. Culture is a huge thing. You know, the culture here in Europe compared to the Middle East, compared to Asia, very, very different. And certainly with security and espionage, those cultures do come into huge play. You know, if I went to Asia and I asked somebody who a policeman that's doing royalty protection or a receptionist some information, because they come from a culture where they want to please everybody and they're driven to do that, they're more likely to give me information that perhaps they shouldn't be. Mm. So, you know, geographical cultures is a huge thing. And obviously, like I said, every company and organization have got their own internal culture of what is acceptable and how they perceive security and threat. So it's culture is a huge thing.
But I imagine there's one thing which wherever you are in the world, it's important, and that's your mentality. That's the calmness that you bring, whatever. And is that something, again, that you are aware of in yourself? Are you intentionally calm, Alex, or are you naturally calm?
I try and be calm.
Do you know what I mean, though? Is there the raging ex-rugby-playing, army-touting man inside Alex, or is actually that's just not you?
It's there, but you've got to remember, a lot of the times I'm dealing with clients who are in crisis. So, you know, they might want their hands holding in the back of a car physically because they've just been through something traumatic. or they may be somebody who's had a bad experience with security. Their last experience wasn't good, so we've got to work with that bias. So you've got to know who you're working with, and you've got to provide them with the assurance that they're working with the right people. Although I'm running companies, it's still a very personal business. People phone up and they want to speak to me,
of course,
and they want to meet me, and they want my knowledge.
Just before I ask your song choice, just going all the way back to your mum and dad and all those kids that they brilliantly fostered, I imagine you saw them doing exactly what you just described a lot, with kids that had huge traumas, which kids literally need their hands held, kids that needed to be supported. Do you think about that a lot? Does that come out, or is it something so deep back in your memory that it's just, you know, not that relevant?
I think I probably do, but I think it's something that I do naturally because of that. Because if you're conditioned to do that, it's not necessarily so sometimes it might come out like chivalry. You know, I might be holding a door for somebody or helping somebody across the road. It's, I guess, if you've just been brought up that way, maybe kids like that today are not brought up that way, but it's how I was brought up. So I guess, it comes out, right? Because that's just part of me. It's what you do.
It's been great chatting to you, Alex. Thank you. Thank you for being so open as well for a man in the world of espionage and counterterrorism and all sorts of other things. You've been remarkably open in an appropriate way, I quickly add, before any clients think that he said things he shouldn't have said. He certainly hasn't. Just before I let you disappear back into that world, and it's an intriguing world to all of us, what's your song choice? Why have you chosen it?
Well, today I've chosen Dizzy Gillespie and Sunny Side of the Street. And the reason why is because there's always a sunny side of the street. You might not think it, but you might not even be on it. It might be the other side, but there is always a sunny side of the street.
Dizzy Gillespie with On the Sunny Side of the Street, the song choice of my business shaper today, Alex Bomberg. He talked about the honour of serving, and that's exactly what he's done in the army and since leaving the army. He talked about the importance of discipline and structure, absolutely critical in this area, but in fact applied in any area of business. And finally, he talked about protection and where it had come from in his family and how he applies it every day to the clients and the situations that they find themselves in. Great stuff. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a fabulous weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM.
In partnership with Mishkonda Raya.
It's business, but it's personal.